The House Workforce Development will come to order. First on the agenda are minutes from March 15th, and so Representative Becca Finn, have you had a chance to look at the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Those who approve the minutes say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Minutes from March 17th. Representative Hemmingson Yeager, have you had a chance to look at the minutes? And those who approve minutes say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Minutes are approved. First on the agenda is House File 2521. Chair Liebling.
Good morning.
I will move that House File 2521 be laid over for possible inclusion. To your bill, Chair Liebling.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. First of all, good morning. I'm delighted to be in this committee. I never have been in this committee before, and I'm so happy to be here. So thank you so much for hearing this bill. So I need to explain briefly. So this is the simulation center proposed for the Southeast Minnesota Rochester area. And it's really two bills. So there is, this is being put forward by a nonprofit called GRAUC, which my testifier will explain is kind of a long-standing community-based organization that was really created years ago to kind of bring together all the educational components in Rochester and try to build up education across the spectrum. And so they are working on establishing this simulation center. And it's really in two bills because it has a capital investment component, but it turned out that some of those costs weren't bondable. And so it got split into two bills. So what is before the committee today is just the non-bondable cost of the center. So I just want to make that clear. And I don't know if there would be a cash capital investment bill if maybe all these costs would be put into that one bill. I'm just not really sure how that would work, but I'm so happy to be able to explain this, be here so that you can all learn about this great project, because this is a project that really directly tries to confront the workforce shortages in healthcare by stepping up the training of people who are going into a whole range of healthcare fields. So a simulation center, which my testifier can explain much better than I, it's a facility where healthcare training can occur on simulation, in simulation. So people can, you know, practice taking a blood pressure, practice giving an injection, that kind of thing, without working on real patients. And it has a lot of benefits, not only because people can hone their skills without fear of hurting a real patient and can get a lot of supervision and help to build those skills and build their muscle memory, but also because there's a real shortage of clinical slots for training. So when you have training going on, you're also pulling away a provider who can also be giving health care directly to patients. You know, whenever we try to teach something, it's just a slower process. So you need both those things. I don't want to say this can replace in-person training, but it's a really important component. And what they're trying to do is make this more widely available in the community to serve more organizations that can come in and contract for time, essentially. So it would serve everybody from, you know, people, I think, trying to be certified nursing assistants, right, all the way up through RNs, and I don't know, even maybe physicians. That's not one we talk about so much, but it's more for the broad spectrum of people who need training. So if I may, Mr. Chair, I'm going to let my testifier give some additional information.
Please, to your testifier, Julie Nigan. And if you could please state your name for the testimony and then continue with it.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep.
My name is Julie Nigan. I am the Executive Director of Greater Rochester Advocates for Universities and Colleges, better known as GRAUC. And GRAUC is a nonprofit that has linked education providers with employers to advocate and promote a skilled workforce for southeastern Minnesota. We've been in existence for 36 years I would have to say GRAUC's major accomplishment was the establishment of the University of Minnesota Rochester. They were a group of business people and educators coming together, pushing for the need for University of Minnesota Rochester, which serves healthcare professions. So in 2020, as a neutral organization, not education, not business, but both, We were asked to unite public and private educational institutions, employers and experts in design and technology, with the goal of establishing a simulation center to upskill current healthcare workers and to prepare future healthcare workers. As an example, Mayo Clinic has two simulation centers, one very large and one small. They are completely booked. Can't get in there. Nobody outside Mayo Clinic can get in there, and frankly, it's mainly the upper level, like surgical staff, medical students, and some nursing staff who get in there. But they're beyond capacity right now. Olmsted Medical Center, the other large healthcare provider in southern Minnesota, has no access. Their employees have no access to simulation technology to upskill their workers as well in new techniques and to work and learn as a team. So we have together, since 2020, done a needs analysis, a business and governance plan, and completed a co-design process to address equity, inclusion, and diversity in both the training and in the staff. We met with our co-design people, met with the people from University of Minnesota, and the co-designers were our current healthcare workers in the Rochester area from diverse communities who have had experience with simulation, know the great side of it and what they'd like to do better. And so they were able to guide, they're guiding some of our curriculum and some of our actual technology. We've also explored curriculum, as I mentioned, space design, technology, and possible locations. We urge you to make an investment in the Simulation Center for Southeastern Minnesota and to partner with us to train and prepare our nurses and other healthcare workers who will serve patients now and in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any other testifiers who wish to testify on this bill? Okay. Now we'll go to member questions. Any member questions or comments? Okay. Representative Weins, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Brandt. Thank you, Representative Liebling and Ms. Nygaard. I'm just curious. I don't think I heard exactly where it was physically located, so if you can discuss that a little bit. I love the community aspect to this. And then also maybe the capacity throughput. So those two things I'd like to know a little bit more about.
Great.
Ms. Nygaard.
Oh, I'm sorry. We currently are looking at various locations in the Rochester area with an emphasis on downtown Rochester. As if you're not from Rochester, you may not know, but if you're from any larger city, you know that downtown areas have lost a great deal of their workforce. And so there are multiple spaces available in downtown Rochester that we would like to remodel. We do not plan on building a center. It's a remodeling process and have no interest in an actual building a center. Capacity, we hope to serve 1,250 healthcare workers at a minimum, 1,250 healthcare workers per year, if not more than that. Because of this, our nursing, schools of nursing that serve Rochester, and there are a number of them, will be able to expand the number of nursing students. Right now, they are limited by clinical space, and their clinical, 50% of their clinical time can be spent in simulation as opposed to being on the floor with nurse supervisors, so they can expand their numbers out.
Representative Weins.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Liebling and Ms. Nygaard. Thank you.
Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and Representative Liebling, and to the testifier. I am sorry I was a couple minutes late, but maybe you said this earlier. I know this is a one-time request. I see the ongoing will be sustained with user fees and things. Is there any other partners up in front of this besides the state of Minnesota, should you get the $3.2 million? Was there other collaborations on the front end to get this going? And again, if I missed that, I apologize.
Ms. Deegan.
Yes. On the front end right now, getting us to this point, we had $0 to do all of this work prior to 2020. Between Mayo Clinic, Olmsted Medical Center, Destination Medical Center, Winona State Foundation, Rochester Area Foundation. We were able to raise the funds to do all of the work that we have done thus far, all the planning and design that we've been able to do, the co-design, the needs assessment, which was, for me, very important. I wanted to make sure we actually needed this center before I put all this time in on it. And it was very obvious after the needs assessment that we did. And also, the business plan was vital. So the business and governance plan is already done. All that was paid for by those partners. As far as going forward, we are certainly seeking state aid. We need significant state aid to make this happen. This is a very grassroots project, completely grassroots. We are honestly approaching some major donors to help with ongoing costs because technology does change and change very quickly. We want to make sure that we can stay up to date. We want to keep our costs down so that it's available for not only for Winona State University and Luther College, but also for Hawthorne Education Center, the Adult Education Center in Rochester, and affordable for them and for the K-12s. So we are seeking ongoing funding. We're also seeking a very sweet rental lease deal. We can't do any of this stuff until we have some major support from the state of Minnesota, frankly.
Chair Liebling.
Thank you. And Representative Baker, I think you might have missed in my opening where I explained this is really two bills, because there's another component in capital investment, but we split it into two because some of the costs weren't bondable. So if there's a cash bill, it may be that the two pieces come together, but you know, right now, because they need costs that can't be bonded for, we have this separate bill.
Lead Baker.
Thank you, and thank you for that, Representative Liebling. Again, I think that we here appreciate the work and the simulation need. I think that your story was compelling, that, you know, you don't have capacity. You need more space for this. Being a member from the West Central Minnesota area, Ridgewater had a robust nursing program that had the simulator lab and all over the state, and we were cutting edge on that. But I also know technology quickly kind of dries up, and if you don't keep up, you're out of it, and we're kind of getting out of it now and have been, because again, just the technology has gotten so fast. So I know we've made just huge investments in Rochester for good reasons. That's where our hub is for medical care. So again, I just want to make sure that we understand the future, the delicateness of the limited funds that we do have in the state of Minnesota, believe it or not. And I just want to make sure that these are I think well thought through, and I appreciate the bill today. Thank you.
Further discussion. Seeing none, closing remarks, Chair Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you again for hearing this bill, which I think is really important to the situation we are in right now, which is critical shortages of people to work in healthcare. And I do want to emphasize, this is not just for the top line. This is not a Mayo Clinic project. This is a project that's really grassroots, as Ms. Niggin was saying, and is going to help people. Our Hawthorne Education Center takes people who have not been in the workforce, and that don't, you know, people who are coming from other nations who may not have good English skills, and really gives them basic education and then trains them to get that first job. And many of them would be certified nursing assistants and things like that. This would help those people. So this is a very broad-based effort. And I just do want to address, you know, it's true the state invests a lot in Rochester. Rochester is the third largest city in the state, you know. And we have the largest private employer, and a lot of the healthcare activity in the state is generated through Rochester. So, you know, Rochester's not all one thing. And so I just would caution, you know, when I hear that, it's a little bit of a trigger for me, Representative Baker, because I just have to say Rochester's a very diverse community, and it has a lot of different needs, just like the rest of the state, certainly like Minneapolis and St. Paul. And so, you know, this is a project that's run by a nonprofit, community-based organization to benefit some of the folks who right now are being left out. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for taking our bill up today.
I will renew my motion that House File 2521 be laid over possible inclusion. Thank you, Chair Liebling and Ms. Negan. Next bill is House File 2233, Representative Hansen. I'll move that House File 2233 be laid over for possible inclusion to your bill. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee members. I apologize for running a little late, and thanks for being flexible with your schedule today. House File 2233 is an agency bill, and it does four things. First, it changes the term private business to participating business in the Pathways Program. Private business is not defined in the statute, and the Attorney General has weighed in on the definition of private business and has determined that it excludes businesses that may be owned by a municipality or tribal nation, such as municipal hospitals or tribal enterprises. So this change will create some consistency between the statutes and promote some greater participation in what are considered really high demand sectors. Second, it allows tribal nations to be direct recipients of DEED's state contamination cleanup grants. This was raised in tribal consultations as a requested change. Contamination cleanup grants are allowed for cleanup on development projects on tribal land, but are only eligible using local development authorities as the application sponsor. And this bill ensures that tribal nations are included in the definition of a development authority and municipality. Third, it moves the use of the word now in line 4.1 and 4.2 in the definition of a displaced homemaker in the Minnesota Family Resiliency Program to better support individuals who are seeking to re-enter the workforce following the divorce, death, separation, or disability of someone upon whom they were financially dependent. The last and biggest change that this bill makes is to promote a more responsible use of taxpayer dollars by being more diligent about the reports that they produce and provide to the legislature. This change will allow certain reports to sunset within a reasonable amount of time, and presently the agency spends a pretty significant amount of time in taxpayer dollars to produce over 36 reports. And these reports can be important in certain situations, and we've had lots of conversations about reports lately in this body, but mandating these reports that are rarely referenced by legislators are duplicative and not a good time use of time or resources. So this bill targets reports that have no sunset in statute and requires the commissioner to submit an annual list of reports that will be set to expire. This list will be sent to the chair and ranking minority members of the committee. And there's some breakdowns of the dates in the bill. I won't bore you with all of the details and when they expire, but I would encourage you to look at that. And with that, I'll turn it over to my testifier. Thank you, Chair.
Welcome, committee. Please identify yourself for the record, Mr. Commissioner, and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Kevin McKinnon, the temporary commissioner of DEED. Thank you, Representative Hansen, for the great overview of our policy bill changes. I would just also mention that we've been very thoughtful and in communication with the tribal nations on making some of these changes, particularly in the Pathways program and the Contamination Cleanup Program, along with our work in just changing some of the wording around the Displaced Homemaker Program. As it relates to the mandated reports piece that we're trying to get clarification on, we're obviously not trying to get out of all of these reports unless you want us to. We would submit a number of reports for consideration that the legislature could make, depending on their usefulness to you. I would also mention that we do an annual report and inventories of programs for everything, essentially, at DEED. So there's a little bit of redundancy there, but we just want to make it very clear to you that you would decide which reports would not be needed. We would submit a list of those that could be considered, but it's certainly up to the legislature to decide which programs we could discontinue doing. So with that, thank you, Representative Hansen. Any questions? I'd be happy to answer.
Discussion. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, good to see you in this capacity. Congratulations. Again, and it's very timely that you kind of are able to circle back with us this time of our session work. We have heard, first of all, I appreciate the bill. I think it's good. It's a good cleanup. I think what we should see and hear for reporting purposes, and so that I kind of get. But this committee this year has heard just countless requests for workforce grants and get us folks trained out of incarceration or youth that are in trouble or at risk. And we've heard so many really good stuff. And I also, you know, recently have been, you know, reading the reports from the OLA and even the Minnesota folks from the Nonprofits Association. They're concerned that we're doing so much, we're not able to keep enough eyeballs to make sure the money that is going out is going to get to the right intent. Can you help us as a new commissioner? Can I give us that oversight? Because this committee is putting a lot of things on you here very shortly. However that decision comes through, can you give this committee some assurances of how you're able to make sure, whether it's either more staff or it's resources or just different ways of looking at things, so when we pass the millions of dollars to folks that are in need of this to get workers out there, how can you help us make sure it's landing in the right place?
Commissioner McKinnon.
Mr. Chair and Representative Baker, we take this responsibility very seriously. And I think a lot of you have probably heard over the years from various organizations that you work with that maybe there are some issues with how we handle some of this, and primarily around some of the requirements that we put on our grantees. Those are all in place for a reason, and as it relates to how we interact with those grantees, we want to make sure that they understand the process. We want to make sure that they have the capacity to actually administer these grants. That's a big part of what we do on the front end, is trying to help people understand here are the requirements that you're required to do and to report on before we actually even provide money to those organizations. As I mentioned, we take this very seriously, particularly, you know, I've been obviously at the department for 17 years, and on the economic development side, we have dealt with this a lot. I know our workforce development division deals with this a lot, so it's a lot of front-end training of the grantees that we're getting, and on the back end, just making sure that the uses and the direction of the money is going for appropriate uses. Lastly, I'll just address the staffing question. We at DEED, much like many other organizations across the state, are still trying to hire more staff. We will obviously have to do that as well moving forward here with a few different programs that come in. So we're very focused on the training of those staff and ensuring that they understand the steps that we take, not only from a DEED policy perspective, but also in consultation with the Department of Administration who oversees a lot of the grant policies. So I hope that gives you some sense of how we plan to deal with it.
Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for that answer. I think, again, as the administrative fees and the what you need for that staffing is necessary because it's coming at you. But what I think I also want to know is, again, I'm in a unique position myself in under DHS granting with my opioid council work, and a lot of these agencies are really overwhelmed with the grant requirements of what we are putting on our agencies. When you say you're meeting with these folks ahead of time, you train them up, they a lot of times don't get the money until they've exhausted or actually have had the expense. I mean, that's where a lot of it goes. What is your mechanism that if you see a nonprofit or a thing out there that isn't checking the boxes right, do you have the ability to say stop, or do you need, because we've told you to give them the money? I want to know, what is your authority to say this isn't right, we can't do this with this group because they're not participating like they've been told, dot, 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 dot. Can you just, again, remind us where your authority is to make sure that you don't hand out the grant money when they're not following the rules?
Commissioner, remind Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Baker, as I mentioned, we do take this very seriously, and in the case that you bring up, yes, we would withhold payments. If there are things that we see that do not make sense, we would obviously investigate it, and in some cases, we might have to go back and try to collect a previous payment if that were the case and it was discovered after. In my time at DEED, I've had to do this a number of times where we don't even enter into grant agreements when there are some concerns, and unfortunately you as representatives of organizations in those areas are probably well aware of times where that has happened. We try to come to some resolution. We try to work. We try to implement exactly what the intentions are. But when there are issues, yes, we have the authority to essentially work with everybody to understand that maybe this organization is just not ready for that funding. We don't want to do that. We hope that the organizations that are out there are capable, and we want to work with them to be able to do that. But as I mentioned, we take this very seriously, and that's our role.
Representative Baker.
Final comment. Thank you. It just, and I appreciate that, because we are seeing these bills for sometimes very quickly. We give them to you. You're the final check. You're the final spot. And there are citizens out there all over the Minnesota that expect all of us to do our job right, and we're counting on you to do that. So, again, thank you for that. It's just we really have to make sure that all of our granting processes right now are checked and rechecked, because we don't want to have any more mistakes. So I appreciate your help. Thank you.
Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Mr. Commissioner. I am at the opposite of where Rep. Baker is. We're hearing from entities that are struggling with these restrictions, that think that there's too many barriers, too many red tapes. So my question is, like, while I'm all for accountability, but I also want to make sure that the resources that we put out to say that is going to go to the community, to support community, because these nonprofits are, you know, they are the firefighters and the frontline workers of our communities, especially, you know, communities that have been disadvantaged are not normally sitting at the table, and not in leadership indeed, or in the spaces that decisions are being made. How can we, like, make sure that there's a peace in the valley with accountability and accessibility? Because I think right now the two are at odds, and I really want to make sure that there is a way that we can get accountability and accessibility both at the table.
Commissioner McKinnon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hassan, DEED has some internal policies in how we administer grants, reimbursement-based. About 20% of the grant agreement is related to DEED, okay? 80% of the grant agreement is really Department of Administration, State of Minnesota, grant contracting requirements. We work very closely with the Department of Administration. There are some instances where some of those larger issues are a challenge that may or may not be DEED's responsibility. DEED's responsibility is obviously to administer the grant and utilize the rules and program regulations that that the state has for contracting. That, and I take this very seriously too, is this is where we have to be able to work with the grantees ahead of time to help them access these resources through the existing policies and programs that we have. And that is a responsibility that we take on. With the number of organizations that we have to deal with, we try to do as many collaborative sessions with other grantees so they can work together as well and understand some of the requirements and work with other organizations who have done it before to help them gain the capacity that they ultimately need to get through this. So we try as hard as we can to help grantees through the process. We don't want to sit on the money. We want to get the money out. That is that's our role. Those are your intentions. But we want to make sure that it's obviously getting out in the fashion that we're supposed to get it out in. So, thank you.
Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioner, for that explanation. Both Chair Zhang and I had entities that are coming to our office that had, you know, funding through the legislator that went to DEED that they were unable to access because of the reimbursement rates, and like you have to do the work and come back and do reimbursement. And some of these entities are so small they don't have the dollars to do the work. So there used to be cash advance. Is that still a thing? And then there's also some concerns about the matching grants when there is, you know, dollars that we say that the community has to have matching grant and the community can't come up with the matching grant. In that instance, what does DEED do, and how do you support entities that are very small and don't have a capacity to come up with the matching grants?
Commissioner McKinnon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hassan, your first question, cash advance. Yes, we have the authority to do a small cash advance. I think it's $25,000 or $50,000. I'm not exactly sure off the top of my head. But in those cases, you do a financial review as per the instructions on how cash advances should work. And basically a risk analysis is how you deal with that. Have we done them? Yes, we have done them. As it relates to the matching requirements, it sort of depends on whether the legislature puts in matching requirements within the program, or whether it's just a straight grant without matching requirements. That's typically something that we would see in the legislation. There's also instances where, if we're talking about capital investment requests versus general fund requests, there's some other issues that we have been dealing with over the past couple of years related to that. As more nonprofit organizations, as an example, are receiving capital investment funding, which comes along with a whole other set of regulations that MMB oversees.
Closing statement, Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee members. I appreciate your time today, and hope you will consider this.
I will renew my motion on House File 2233 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Hanson and Commissioner McKinnon. Next is House File 2559, Representative Hussein. I will move the House File 2559 be laid over for possible inclusion. To your bill, Representative Hussein.
Good morning, Neil Zhang. Hello, everyone. Chair Zhang, thanks for giving me the opportunity to present this bill. House File 2559 is Hmong American Partnership Workforce. It's known also this organization, HAP. HAP has been a great partnership for the state and Ramsey County for many years, in providing not only workforce training, but also providing services for community members. In fact, HAP is the largest social service organization serving in the United States, Southeast Asian community in the country. It's an organization who has a good track record and has been helping not only South Asian, but also helping the new immigrant in the state of Minnesota. While the South Asian community is HAP, it's also serving the member of the 18 nationalities that is in the state of Minnesota. We just celebrated that grand opening for another two workforce located in my district. And I'm very excited about the work that they're doing and to help for those community. It's also those two locations is providing both training for CDL training for the bus drivers and heavy mechanical training, which is the bus and trucks and many other equipment. Not only are we doing the workforce, also they are doing providing social services for many of our community and immigrant in the state of Minnesota. And if you would allow me, Mr. Chair, I have a testifier, Maniza Tao, which is the executive director for HOP.
Welcome to the committee. Maniza Tao, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Maniza Tao. Thank you, Chair Jay Shong. Good morning, everyone, Vice Chair Brand and members of the committee. My name is Maniza Tao, and I am the president and CEO of the Hmong American Partnership, or HAP for short. Thank you for the opportunity to share my testimony in support of House File 2559. I want to also let the committee know that we have a number of clients, community members, and community leaders right here as well to attending this hearing this morning. For over 30 years, HAP has served our Hmong and Southeast Asian communities here in the Twin Cities. And our mission has been to help our communities reach their potential by providing holistic wraparound services to help move people from poverty to prosperity. HAP, as Representative Hussein has said, is the largest Hmong and Asian-led organization in the state, serving over 25,000 people annually. Since 1990, we have placed thousands of people into jobs, garnering the credibility and trust from employers, businesses, and post-secondary institutions. HAP provides employment readiness services, job training, job placements to one of the fastest growing populations in our state, the Southeast Asian American population. For the past 2.5 years, we've reached over 150,000 Minnesotans, mostly API and Southeast Asians, through our outreach efforts, job fairs, as well as our social media postings. We've enrolled 748 participants into our jobs training program. Of the 475 participants in a career training track, 70% completed their training, 60% received certification or credentialing. The median wage of our training graduates is $18 an hour. Direct appropriations are critical to meet HAP workforce development work. By providing the ability to more quickly deploy resources out into our communities to serve on a broader range level, as well as allowing for customized program elements and innovative approaches that are often not possible in narrow government grant RFPs. And the same accountability measures are in place for direct appropriations as they are for competitive government grants. HAP has been a trusted messenger in our community for over 30 years when it comes to workforce and economic development. We also have a client, Tusu Ta, who also goes by Tui, who is a client of our workforce development training program, here with us to share his story. Thank you for your time, for your consideration, and we look forward to continuing our good works with the state to ensure that our communities have equitable and accessible programming needs met for workforce development. Thank you so much.
Welcome to the committee. Mr. Tao, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Chair Song, Vice President Brand, and members of the committee, my name is Tusu Tao, and I'm a job training client in HAP program. 6 months ago, after moving to Minnesota, I was lost and I was looking for a career change that would give me a sense of purpose, provide skills that are transferable, and create opportunity for job security. That's when I learned about HAP's career training and education classes, and I enrolled in a course in ITT Fundamental this past fall. While in class, I learned about computer hardware, operating systems, and I discovered that I like working with data and coding. Although I was learning the basics of data, I made time to study on my own, and I learned how databases are structured, why companies use data as insights, and how those insights help improve the growth of companies. Everything I was learning about data inspired me to and I felt like I had discovered my next calling and to fully pursue data analytics. Then in February 2023, I enrolled into another class with HAP and learned about the Salesforce CRM platform and to become a Salesforce administrator. I am now nearly done with the class and expect to take my Salesforce exam in April 2023. Recently, I competed for an apprenticeship role in data analytics with Cargill, and among the 60 plus applicants, I was the fortunate candidate they selected. Today, I'm no longer lost because I found my confidence and the discipline to learn. And in the upcoming week, I will be starting my new role in data analytics. I'm so grateful to HAP for providing all the opportunities, the one-on-one mentorship, and for providing resources such as support services to help my housing so that I can stay in school. I would not have made it this far if it wasn't for HAP. Thank you for your time in listening to my success story.
Thank you for sharing your story, Mr. Tao, and congratulations. Discussion. Representative Baker.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and welcome to Minnesota. 6 months into it, I see you're doing very, very well, so congratulations on that, and it was a great testimony. And to our executive director, the CEO, thank you for the presentation. Looking at your company, it looks like you guys are doing a lot of good reach out to that community, and I know that they're such an important part of our economy here in Minnesota. It's a $2 million request. Can you tell us also, on a little larger scale, what other areas do you receive funding to help support your services?
Mine's a call.
Thank you so much for the question, Representative. We also receive, while we are going back for OIC appropriation, which is split up between the other OICs in the state of Minnesota, that in the past, that appropriation was to launch our HAPS OIC, because we launched, of course, over COVID. And that was to help build capacity. Currently, we have other deed grants as well, and that is to support other supportive service areas as well as direct training services for workforce development. And so we do what I call piecemeal funding together to ensure that we can provide that holistic wraparound service, because we know that our clients who come to us, they cannot be successful if we do not help meet their basic needs at home. And so it's not just about providing them with workforce development training courses. It's providing them with, behind the scenes, what are still your needs, transportation needs, clothing stipends to have appropriate clothing for their jobs or their training courses, as well as food. There's a lot of food insecurity still. And so those are the types of fundings that we pull together to make sure they get workforce development training, but also wraparound services. And that's usually through grants as well as foundation dollars.
Representative Baker.
And that's what I was looking for, too. Thank you. I was looking to see if there's other foundations that are supporting you, maybe some corporate donations, some partnerships that are always really critical to leverage the dollars of the state taxpayer dollar. But, again, I just want to thank you for that comment. Thank you.
Representative Zelesnikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for being here today. I'm excited to see that this ask involves a pathway for somebody to come here and in 6 months to hear the story, because that is the Minnesota goal, and you're the Minnesota miracle. So, you know, I love to see the healthcare track. I've looked at your website. I like to see the master plan, and when you look at the CNA programs to be pathways to healthcare and manufacturing and IT, and I missed one, but there are four, IT, transportation, manufacturing, healthcare, and IT. That's your four pillars, from my understanding, and your community is a very hardworking community and a very essential community for the state of Minnesota. So I've had the privilege to work as a CNA with members from your community, and I'm just thrilled to see that you're focusing on future success for everybody, and commend you for that, because it's a very vital part, and this is exciting to see the success stories, because it's what it's all about. So being able to have family and have your unit and your community be strong, that is the goal for Minnesota. Thank you.
Representative Breyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here and testifying and for bringing this bill forward, Representative Hussein. My comment is simply that as a researcher and a person who has advised many, many people starting their careers to go into data analytics. To me, it's one of the most promising directions to go. There will be so much opportunity for growth and new ways of thinking and ways to contribute. So I just want to congratulate you on that. Thank you.
Representative Hemmings and Yeager.
Thank you, and I just want to again say thank you as well for bringing this bill. Two things. Welcome to the nerdy side of STEM. I'm a genetics person, so I know all about like the data analytics going forward. It's really promising, so congrats as well. And then two, to kind of speak to your programming, I think it really, it shows success right here, right? Because when you're looking at the whole person and like the holistic of everything around it, that's how we set up people for success. So just want to say thank you for your work.
Representative Weems.
Chair Zhang, Representative Hussein, and President Tao. Tui, great job. So I'm echoing what everybody said today. We're just very, very excited, very proud for what the Hmong community has done as they've entered Minnesota over these last 40 years. And starting in St. Paul, I had the good fortune to work with some Hmong people in business, and it was very rewarding. And I'd like to see this legacy continue. And so I think it's for you, Madam President. What communities, physical communities or locations or cities are available to receive this HAP grant and work through? Is it mainly St. Paul or is it greater in the state? Would you pop? Because I don't know.
Ms. Manzarco.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you so much, Representative, for the question and the very kind words as well. You know, COVID has have brought its challenges to our communities, but it's also brought some really great opportunities. Currently, we currently we offer hybrid courses, which means the accessibility is even greater than pre-COVID. And we plan to continue these hybrid courses. If COVID had not happened, we probably would have stayed with the in-class, in-person model. I think many of us. And that would have been a smaller reach to your point, Representative. It would have been probably the Twin Cities, the greater metro area. However, with our continued plans to stay hybrid, we would be accessible to all Minnesotans. And in the, you know, our vision for the future is to become an accredited OIC. Accreditation is very similar to a higher education accreditation. So very, very intense. With due diligence done, but when we get to that level in the next several years, it could potentially open up to national participants as well.
Representative Weems.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you.
Closing remarks, Representative Hussein.
I mean, thank you for listening, for great testifiers, and the executive director who's doing an amazing job. This organization is well known in our state and in our district, and not only providing education, they providing training and helping those individuals to find a job. And I'm excited to bring this forward, and this organization and the Hmong community has been an icon for many of our immigrant in Minnesota, and this organization is helping a lot in immigrant, not only Hmong community, but helping other newcomers in the state of Minnesota. And I look forward working with them, and I would appreciate it if we can have a support on this bill for this cause. Thank you.
I will renew my motion that House File 2559 be laid for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Hussein, Ocho Manzato, and Tui Ha. Next bill is House File 2889. Representative Leslie. Okay. Representative Lee is not here. Representative Wogama. Oh, Representative Lee is here. I will move the House File 2889 be laid up for possible inclusion. Welcome to committee, Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
To your bill.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for hearing House Bill 2889 today. It is a very important bill for my community, and so I appreciate the time. I'm honored to present before you with Pastor Carl Johnson, who is a fixture in our community on the east side of St. Paul and has been feeding our community food for the soul and body for years. House Bill 2889 is a one-time appropriation of $415,000 to Project Restore Minnesota, which would help Pastor Johnson expand the operation that he's been running for almost a decade to fight food insecurity in our community. As you may know, food insecurity levels reached historic levels during the pandemic, and food shelves even saw increases in demand last year, because we know the recovery has not been equal for all communities, especially our communities of color. And in my district, a district with one of the lowest annual household incomes in the state, I know how important the need is. This is an important bill that takes an innovative approach to addressing both food insecurity and a workforce shortage in our community. And with that, I turn it over to Pastor Johnson to share with you the impact of this project.
Welcome to committee, Pastor Carl Johnson. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, my name is Pastor Carl Johnson. First of all, I would like to say thank you for all listening and hearing this this work of love and labor today. I would like to first read a letter from our caterers. We have been working with Tony and Stacy Moran for 7 years, and they have been feeding free meals to families on the east side 2 to 3 times a week without any kind of breakage in that. And so they've been really passionate about coming into this program that we call the Social Kitchen Fellowship. They will actually be the executive directors of kitchen and training. They have had over 25 years of catering experience. If you ask stories about Tony and Stacy Moran, there have been people who have been married, who have gotten free receptions at their food hall. They have helped families and individuals for longer than I can imagine. And one of the things that they are passionate about is creating more workforce in that community. And so just give me 1 second to get their letter up. We are writing you today to discuss a pressing issue facing the Twin Cities, the lack of food service employees in today's job market. This issue not only affects businesses, but also a significant impact on our community's most vulnerable population, including the hungry and homeless. As you may be aware, many individuals who were released from incarceration struggle to find meaningful employment due to their criminal record. The lack of opportunities often leads to a cycle of poverty and recidivism. However, we believe there is a solution that can benefit both these individuals and the community at large. We propose a program that would provide newly released individuals with the opportunity to learn food service businesses with simultaneously helping to feed the hungry and homeless in the Twin Cities area. This program would not only address the shortage of food service workers, but also provide much needed support to those in need. Many individuals who are released from incarceration have a passion for cooking and could greatly benefit from training in the food service industry. By providing them with the necessary training and support, we can help them transition back into society and build a sustainable future for themselves. Furthermore, this program will have direct positive impact on our community. By providing meals to those in need, with the ongoing pandemic and economic hardships, the demand for food assistance has only increased and making the initiative even more crucial. I urge you to consider this program as a viable solution to the shortage of food service workers as a way to support the Twin Cities community's most vulnerable members. We've been working with Pastor Carl over the past few years feeding the community. Thank you for your time and consideration. I would like to also say that not only am I a proponent of ending food insecurity, we have started a micro grocery store. We feed kids over the summer hot meals within our neighborhood. They do not receive hot meals. They receive cold meals from St. Paul Public Schools. We made sure that that would not happen. We have served during the pandemic over 10,000 burritos a month. And we have made sure that the ecosystem that we are building within our organization directly addresses food insecurity and families that are directly impacted within our community. We work with our St. Paul Public Schools. We work with other nonprofit organizations such as Every Meal. We work with Indigenous Root. We even have support from local grant writers such as Eastside Fungus Group. And even our chair at one time had one of our meals before he was the great chairman, Jay Jong. So I would like to just thank you for hearing our proposal. And we know that this is a smaller proposal to the ones that you've seen, but we are greatly impacted by the workforce development that is happening within our city, and we do not want to see a debt in the east side for those who need to not only be hungry but also have a fledgling career that can take them to newer heights.
Discussion. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, love the programs that are bringing folks into the culinary arts. I appreciate this bill, Representative. And again, we talked about a little bit of one of these last week as well with our ProStar program. But again, this is a great career pathway for people if they want to start in the culinary arts. This is very focused on that. I think your community sounds very much in need of this program. And so to the testifier, Mr. Chair, you might have seen this as a theme of my questioning today, is other partners that you're working with to help supply this and help leverage the dollars of taxpayers. Can you help us with sort of the other ways you can make a few dollars to help leverage that?
Yes, we are in conjunction with St. Paul Minneapolis Foundation. We fill out grants. We have personal donations. We have what we call partner meetings with businesses and organizations to talk about this program. We're actually having a meeting that's open to the public May 15th. So our program is one program that involves community. And so we do, in our program, we do what we call transferable skills. And that transferable skills program, it means that any and everyone has a piece to play to make sure that people can be a partner of this program.
Representative Baker.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. Sounds great. I wish you all the best. Thank you very much for coming today.
Representative Senator Muro.
Thank you. Hi, Pastor Carl. We did the BCLI program together a couple years ago, so good to see you. And I remember seeing you on Zoom with your amazing grocery store in the background. So I'm excited to hear about this project. I think it sounds great. My question just about the handout that we have in our packet for Faith City Church.
Yes.
Can you just kind of talk about the connection between the nonprofit and the church, just because, like, you know, I think as the government, we're not allowed to, you know, fund religious organizations. So if you could just explain a little bit more about that.
Yes, we understood that. And so this programming is out the scope of Faith City Church. So we partner with Project Restore, who's already doing workforce development. And the Eastside Funders Group gave us someone called Rachel Speck, who works for Exchange Minnesota. So we've put in about 55 hours of program writing for this program outside of the scope. And that was my mistake of putting that one pager on there. And so we just wanted everyone to know that these partnerships that we have work in conjunction, and our faith community is not the main focus of this program.
Representative Lee?
Yeah, just for clarity, Project Restore Minnesota is the fiscal sponsor. So you probably know they manage other DEED programs and grants too.
Representative Muro.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing on closing remarks, Representative Lee.
Great. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. This is an idea directly from our community, which has identified a need and also solutions. So I hope that you and the committee will consider it for inclusion. Thank you.
I will renew my motion that House File 2889 be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you so much, Representative Lee and Pastor Johnson. Next bill, Representative Gomez. Welcome to the committee. House File 2583. I will move that House File 2583 be laid over for possible inclusion. Welcome, Tax Chair.
Thank you, Chair Dong. Wonderful to see you up there with your gavel. I have a, I didn't see a, oh. Can I have some of these
out? Mr. Chair, this is the first time Chair Gomez is here and I don't see any treats.
I know, I'm empty-handed and I haven't even ever appeared before Chair Zhang before. We'll have to.
Chair Gomez, I expect my tax bill to pass.
My request as well. Thank you.
Absolutely. We can all meet for roast beef outside Chair Zhang's office one of these days for your special treat. Thank you. Thank you so much for hearing the bill and to Chair Zhang and members of the workforce development community. Today we have House File 2583, which would provide funding for workforce development activities for at-risk youth and unengaged young adults experiencing disabilities in my district, 62A. And they're kind of handing out a packet about the organizations that would be funded with these dollars. So my district's home to a diverse population of underserved youth and young adults, many of whom face significant barriers to employment.
The unemployment rate, as I'm sure you have discussed over and over in this committee, although overall when you look at it, it's really low in Minnesota compared to other states. If when you disaggregate that data, you know, young people with disabilities, people of color, particularly black people, are have experienced high rates of unemployment, even in the current economy where we're always hearing about the workforce challenges. So that's a real like disconnect that we need to figure out how to knit together if we really expect to address our workforce shortage. So that's the effort of this bill, is to help to create some of those connections. Without access to early work experience, civic engagement opportunities, education pathways, you know, young people will continue to face these limited prospects. And, you know, when a young person fails to become economically self-sufficient, in our society, that has costs in other ways, the human costs and real economic costs to our public systems. So I hope that the members of the committee will support this House File 2583. You know, it provides job readiness training, on-the-job training opportunities, support services, mentorship, networking opportunities for this population. You know, the impact of this bill would be significant. It would not only help young adults in my district find stable, well-paying jobs, but also increase their engagement in the community overall. You know, this population also is really experiencing a lot of issues with violence, you know, drug use. I mean, it's really a pretty tragic situation. And, you know, having economic opportunities, having, you know, positive mentoring relationships with adults who look like them and who can provide, you know, sort of a vision of what a life could be like, can really make an impact on people, on those young people in our community who are really struggling right now. So thank you so much for the time today, and I have a few testifiers with me, Mr. Chair, if you would want to hear from them.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yeah, thank you so much, and good morning, everybody. Thank you for having me. Thank you, Rep. Gomez, for presenting that amazing. So I'm really excited to be in this committee today to testify on the needs of our young people who came miles and miles to live in this great country, especially in a cold place called Minnesota. There's a recent research made by Wilder's.
Can you identify yourself for the record, please?
Oh, yes. I skipped that part. I'm too excited, I guess. My name is Okasha Dikane, and I am the executive director of FREYR, which is one of the organizations asking for the funding today.
Thank you.
Yeah. So there's a recent research that shows the employment disparities that exist in our communities right now. The research was done by Wilder's Research. It ranks Twin Cities to be one of the number one metropolitan cities to champion in workforce participation, and the last one in not addressing the disparities that are existing. So we are really last in those disparities. When we talk about employment disparities, what are these? This is the gap that exists within our communities. As a professional and a young person, I came to America with knowledge, with skills, and with talents. And it took me so many years to find my first job. Right now, these young people in our community who are facing the same problem, the same issues. So last year, we served more than 400 community members. Some of them are young adults who have experienced economic disparities, who have been faced by COVID, who have had a language, transportation, to name a few. When we talk about reducing the juvenile crimes in our community, we have to put the discussion on ways we can engage these younger people into workforce or into economic or work readiness projects. So I don't want to have a long conversation today here, but what House File 2583 will do is it will create a pathways to prosperity for these young people. It will bring them to the table where they can talk about what they need and also improve their way to make an honest livable wage that will come from those trainings that we offer.
Chair Gomez, I see that you have three other testifiers, too. Are they here to testify, too?
They are, yeah. I want to be respectful of the committee's time, so, but, yeah, if we could hear from them also and just ask them to keep their comments pretty brief. I know you guys have a lot of work. So Nemo Ahmed was next.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Warda from MNCAPD. I'm a manager there. I won't take up too much time. MNCAPD is a nonprofit organization. We focus mainly on the East African community of the disability community. So we have a 245D license. The main thing that we strive to break down is the language and cultural barriers, especially when it comes to employment. We have a lot of parents who go through the struggles of helping their children that have a disability all throughout kindergarten, all the way to high school, and then after that, they kind of get to that point of not understanding what to do, and they don't like to ask for help. So we strive to host educational classes for parents, as well as we strive to host educational classes and job readiness classes for the youth and parents so that they can be right there with their children step by step and understand it in their own language and the cultures. Our mission is to be able to have the youth connect with not just the job that they want, but with other people so that they can see that it doesn't matter if you have a disability or not, that you can be in a position of doing what you would like to do.
Thank you. Did your testifier want to testify?
Okay, yeah, that concludes the witnesses.
Yes, discussion. Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Chair Gomez. You and I share a district that is very diverse. It's a wonderful district, but we're also blessed with a lot of challenge. We went through the murder of George Floyd, the civil unrest, and COVID-19. Impact, and what COVID-19 actually did is not really bring more challenge. It just highlighted the inequities that already existed in our system, the disparities that, you know, some of us have been talking about many, many years, that people thought that we were crazy because or we were exaggerating. But it exacerbated those inequities, and when something like, you know, the civil unrest and combined with COVID-19, combined with a community that was already, you know, struggling, when you put all of that together, you have a chaos. And our community is beautiful. It's resilient. It is, people say PTSD, but I say continuous trauma, because the issues don't end. So in order for you to go through PTSD, you have to be done with trauma, and then you start healing. Our communities are in continuous trauma, whether it's police brutality, poverty, opioid, our relatives who are experiencing homelessness, it doesn't end. I was just reading this weekend, the Minnesota Demographic Center just released their 2023 report. Specifically, the East African community is the youngest community in the state of Minnesota. 50% of that community is under the age of 18, and it's also the poorest community with many challenges. So I appreciate you bringing this bill. Because I am a true believer of lifting from the bottom, and this is how we lift from the bottom, because we put our resources where we need it the most, and this community has you know, it's a new community, it's a young community with a really high entrepreneurship spirit. Mm-hmm. Every person that I talk to says that they want to be their own boss and they want to do, they have the American dream locked in their head. It's just that a matter of providing the resources, providing the skills, and providing what they need to get to where they're going. And this is how you do it. You provide the resources and equip people with what they need in order to help themselves. This isn't a handout, this is a hand up. You're helping somebody that needs help. So I appreciate this bill. Thank you for the folks from the community who are here. We have a lot of work to do in our district, in our city, and in some of our, you know, disadvantaged communities. So thank you for your work.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Jung, and Representative Gomez, Chair Gomez. You know, thank you for this bill, and I think, you know, Representative Hassan brought up a lot of important points. And I'm just kind of wondering if you could explain, are these three separate entities, and are they all umbrellaed under one group, or how does a grant get split three ways? That's probably my biggest question is what's the structure of it there? I think there's definitely a lot of need, but understanding the structure of it I think would be helpful.
Chair Gomez.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, if I could turn to my testifier.
Yep, that's a good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Yep, yeah. That's a thank you so much, Chair Jay. That's a great question. So it will be, it's a coalition of three organizations. Three of them do a great job in a grassroots level in our communities. And the funding, the $600,000 that we're requesting, will go directly to them, to these three organizations, in an equal amount under DEED. So it will go to DEED, and then after that, it comes to us.
Representative Nelson.
Now, thank you for that explanation. I think that helps in understanding how it was divided, and you know, for if it was a one umbrella over everything, and they're kind of three working together. But so, thank you.
Representative Celeste Lekar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative. My question was just similar a little bit on just understanding bringing three organizations together. If the money is to fund the staffing of the oversight for this new organization, or if it is $600,000 that's going in joint to pay for salaries and leadership and whatever positions, or if it's for program costs, is you know, through talking about child care help for youth and connecting youth with professionals, how does that look, and what are your thoughts on that?
Mr. Yukasa, the King.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Yes, again, another great question. So this funding will be used to pay for a full-time staff for both of the three organizations. And the remainder after the full-time staff will be used to provide a support services to the young adults and also those experiencing disability, whether it's childcare, whether it's transportation, to meet their needs. So, yeah.
Representative Zalesnicker.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Do you have an idea of what percentage, if it's one full-time staff for each location, what amount of money is that of the $600,000 that you're allocating?
Just a kidding.
It's going to be a full-time person paying $30 an hour, 40 hours a week. So $200,000 each organization minus that amount. Yeah, I don't have it on top of my head on that calculation, but yeah, so it's a FTE, 40 hours a week.
Representative Zalesnicker.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you for explaining that. And is this just wages or is it benefits?
Wages plus benefits.
Mr. Yukasa the King.
Yeah, wages plus benefit.
Representative Zalesnicker.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. So it's possible that it's a $100,000 allocation?
Yes.
For the administrative cost and $100,000 for the program?
For the program.
It's about a half and half split is what it, I'm guessing, from not seeing straight math, but just looking at it from a financial statement. So I guess my question is, I don't have any doubt that there's need to Representative Hassan and Representative Gomez, that there's issues that we're all trying at these committees to address. I'm just wondering what the best utilization of, if there are three programs that exist that work collaboratively together, we see so many of the programs. To me, I'm just asking the question, is the better use of money to assure more money gets to the child care, gets to the scholarships versus adding more administrative staff? So that is just something I'm asking in my mind to understand. So thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing on closing statement, Representative Chair Gomez.
Thank you so much, Chair Zhong and members of the committee, and thanks for the discussion. I think that my sister district representative said it better and more eloquently than I could. She described, you know, the kind of blessing and the challenge, and I think that is, you know, what we're asking for an investment in from this committee today is you know, recognizing that there is, you know, as Representative Hassan talked about, amazing potential entrepreneurial spirit. There are all of these young people who are here. They are our, you know, future leaders and our future workers in our state. And you know, if we don't, when we have this, you know, workforce challenge and BIPOC communities who are disproportionately experiencing unemployment and shut out in various ways and need, you know, the investment, and I appreciate Representative Zeleznikar's questions, and we know that sometimes it's like a lot of times what these staff are doing is working directly with the impacted communities and being that bridge and, you know, sitting down with young people and making sure that, you know, that they have what they need. And so it's not, so adding staff and adding human capacity to these organizations isn't just administrative, right? Because that's a small portion of what they do. You know, they also like provide in these small organizations that are kind of doing a lot with a little. The staffing is partly about administration, but it's also really partly about direct service provision. So So I just really appreciate the consideration and providing us with this chance today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I will renew my motion on House Bill 2583, be later for possible inclusion. Thank you, Chair Gomez and Mr. Yukasa Takani. Next is Representative Wogelman, House Bill 1724. I will move that House Bill 1724 be laid over for possible inclusion. To your bill, Representative Wogelman.
Chair Zhong, it is so great to be back in your committee. Always a pleasure. Vice Chair Brand, thank you as well. I'm here before you this morning to present House File 1724. And I'm bringing this bill before you, Mr. Chair and members, because survivors of sex trafficking and domestic abuse face extreme barriers to regaining independence and stability. As these survivors overcome the unthinkable traumas that they have experienced, they also need to find stability through job training, help with lost documentation, resolving legal issues, childcare, transportation, laptops, appropriate work clothes. Those are the barriers that survivors are facing, and it's made even worse because many workplaces don't understand the specific needs of survivors and could use supportive training as a safeguard to their success. And employment is key to support the survivors and their families, but it's also key for housing, because to attain permanent housing, you got to have maintained successful employment. Those are the barriers that we are trying to break down through House File 1724, which is a bill to appropriate $500,000 in fiscal year 2024 for a grant to Avivo to provide resources and support services for survivors of sex trafficking and domestic abuse in the greater St. Cloud area as they search for employment. That's what this bill, oh, and I'll also note, Mr. Chair, that this is a one-time appropriation. That's why I'm bringing this bill forward. That's what the bill does. With that, Mr. Chair, I have a testifier who can provide further information to you and the committee on how important this appropriation in House File 1724 is. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Patrick Shepard. I'm the program manager for Vivo in St. Cloud. We're the employment service provider for the Minnesota Family Investment Program. Used to be called the Welfare to Work Program. And we serve Stearns, Benton, Sherburne counties. The project that we're here to talk about is a collaboration between Workforce Development Agency, the Domestic Violence and Human Trafficking Advocacy Programs in St. Cloud. We want to bring our shared expertises together to create a model of helping these survivors achieve self-sufficiency through a successful career. The state workforce development community has specific curriculums for pockets, special populations, and Representative Baker talked about a couple of them with the folks coming out of incarceration. We've talked about youth, but there is no such program for victims of trafficking or domestic violence. So this program would really create a model that we could share across the state of Minnesota to help other agencies serve these populations. And just talking about the need, these primarily women come to us with really just the clothes on their back. We really need to start from the bare beginning and really build up all the skills and all the support structures in place to help these women get good paying jobs so they can move into an independence. And with that, if you have any questions, I certainly can help answer those. Thank you.
Discussions, Representative Rand.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll make these comments brief, but I'm proud to be a co-author of this legislation. I think it's really important for us to get something out the door where we can say this is working, we can use it in other locations. If you just watch the recent news, a number of people were arrested in a sting just in the Bloomington area for soliciting. And although that doesn't actually address the infrastructure of human trafficking that we have in Minnesota, it only addresses the people who were willing to pay for it. And they've been arrested now and are going to be charged with a severe crime. But at the end of the day, we still have a lot of victims that are still out there that are still part of this infrastructure. And when they do leave that infrastructure, the criminal element that's there, we need a place for them. Because you're right, they're coming with nothing. And we need to kind of make them whole again. So I appreciate this opportunity. Thank you.
Representative Santamiro.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Zhang. Thank you, Representative Wolgamott, for bringing this important bill. I'm wondering, and maybe this is a question for the testifier, if you can talk more to kind of what are the organizations that you're partnering with for this work, and then, you know, how, as you're creating this program, as you're creating this curriculum, how are survivors, you know, supporting you in the creation of this curriculum?
Mr. Shepard.
Yeah. So the three partner organizations of Vivo, again, a workforce development program helping folks, our expertise working with folks on the MFIB program. The other organization, Anna Marie's Domestic Violence Shelter and Community Program, been in the St. Cloud area for decades. And then the newest program in this organization is Terebinth Refuge. It's was established 4 or 5 years ago to help with that human trafficking that we saw as a need. So these are established organizations with staff that work very closely with the populations we serve. So certainly the survivors would have a voice in the creation of this. What do they need, and how can we support them as we create this program?
Representative Santamiro.
Thank you. Just a follow-up question. Are there any kind of programs that you all are looking to as models as you're creating this? Thank you.
Mr. Shepard.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, there is no really model for this, and that's part of the pilot project, the 1 year to really create a model. We do have, again, the welfare to work program, which we can use some of the expertise from that. But we definitely, as Representative Wolgamont talked about, we do have to educate the employers in the area as well. And we do have a workforce development council that we work with employers in our area that we would help educate. So there's pieces that we can take from different models, but this is really creating a new model.
Representative Samir. Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, Mr. Shepard, thank you for being here. I know the St. Cloud area, especially in the last several years, has really identified a need for this in the community with human trafficking, and I'm grateful for the work of the local police departments and the collaborative efforts. And I see now Avivo kind of wants to, I think, jump into this focus. You know, $500,000, it's one-time money. You want to get you up and running. How are people going to be able to now know that you are going to be a part of this? What do you think will be sort of, how will you connect with victims of this, and how will you be sort of that leader on this area?
Mr. Shepard.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Baker. That's where Terabit and Anna Marie's come in. They are the organizations that are really literally the boots on the ground, talking with these survivors. So that's where the population would come from, is those two organizations. And they would bring, again, their expertise to the collaboration. And I'm glad that you mentioned the other partners in town, the police. Certainly, we would use a collaborative approach to this. But the actual clients would come from those agencies.
Representative Baker.
And thank you for that. Just a little piece of advice, too, when you come in the future, if you do this, these little one-pagers really help us a lot. We don't have anything in our packet. Maybe there was supposed to be something, but it helps us to kind of know where you're at, what your current programming is, a little bit more than just the face of the bill here. So if that is a possibility in the future, because, again, Avivo is a terrific brand in the state of Minnesota. We really do support their work. This issue in central Minnesota is critical. I'm glad Avivo is stepping up to this. Again, I just want to make sure that we're building this up. It's kind of a new starting program for you guys on this, and I do hope that you have a lot of also financial partners that are helping you kind of build this as well. It's going to be ongoing, and I'm looking forward to hearing a report back when you're got it all set up and running. So hopefully this, if it does pass, we'll see some good results. Thank you for your effort on this.
Representative Celeste.
Thank you, Chair Jung. And thank you, Representative, and to the testifier. My question is just, Avivo looks like it's a very strong program that's done some great things in central Minnesota. And I wanted to ask the question, I've looked at your website. I like to look at financials. When you look at your net income, your expenses for 2021, I looked at 2020, I also looked at 21. But what is your NOI right now as far as your organization?
Mr. Shepard.
Yeah, I know what I have in the St. Cloud area. I'm not as familiar with all the fiscals from the entire organization. So we operate in the St. Cloud area, the welfare to work, the employment services. Mm-hmm. So we work with Stearns, Benton, Sherburne County, and those grants are about $2 million for staffing and then support services for the clients.
Representative Zaleska.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you. So I guess I'm just wondering, are you operating with a net gain right now? Do you have a cash reserve for the St. Cloud division for Avivo?
Mr. Shepard.
Okay. We're grant funded, so we it's a year-to-year grant, so we don't have cash reserves within that. If we don't spend it, then it goes back to the state of Minnesota. So we wouldn't have any rollover cash that we could use.
Representative Zaleska.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you. So I guess my ask would be to just make sure that if we're using all the grant monies that are coming in, that the oversight would be to look at, this is clearly a big issue And so Avivo has done a great job, but there may be another area within your programming that you find, and that's where a report, I think, is helpful to see usage and money expended for different programs, because you've done things with homeless and many other programs. But sometimes, just like in private business, one thing will go down and you move money to another. And so as we're allocating dollars for this committee, just want to make sure that there's a need, that there isn't the possibility to move money within grant monies that you have isn't there, and that this ask of $600,000 is needed, you know, for the strength of your organization. So in the service that model that you are attempting to help, which I believe is very valid. So if there's possibility to move money around internally or not, that was my question, I guess.
Closing remarks, Representative Wogama.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Let's help build a system of support, training, and opportunities for victims of sex trafficking and domestic abuse. Let's help them achieve stability. Let's help them recover from their unthinkable trauma. Let's help them succeed in their lives by including House File 1724 in your finance omnibus bill. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Representative Wogama and Mr. Shepard, make sure you follow up with the GOP members about the concerns. I will renew my motion that House File 1724 be later for possible inclusion. That being said, we are going to meet again this Friday afternoon at 1 p.m. in Room 10. Committee's adjourned.